Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. Let's get back to your emails. We're going to be taking emails, your emails, numbered into the thousands in recent weeks. So it is quite a list, but a good list at that. And many great questions are coming up. If you want to send me an email, just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And you can see where it says connect. Click that and send me an email. This one comes in from Nick, who says, "Hi, Patrick. I wanted your perspective because I think you live near Columbus, Ohio. I have an option through work to go to this area. My wife and I are looking for a very on-fire area to raise our children. So he's asking me, would I characterize Columbus as a place where there are a lot of on-fire Catholics? Do I have any recommendations on parishes, etc.? He says, we're also very interested in Steubenville and wondering how it would compare. Thanks, Nick." Okay, well, happy to help. Yeah, that's right. Nancy and I moved to Columbus, Ohio about 25 years ago now. We were from Southern California, born and raised, and lived our whole lives there except for when we moved out here to Ohio. And people ask, why did you move? Well, a big part of it was at that time we were seeing a lot of, I think maybe some of the signs of an ever-increasing congestion. And I very much love California. I love to go back to California. I go back often. And there's a lot to love about California. But it did get and is continuing to get rather congested. And so those were really the reasons behind the desire to move to a place where it wasn't so congested. Not that that matters one way or the other with regard to your email, Nick, but by way of background. So when we wound up moving here, we had no idea really what to expect in terms of, you know, what would the local church be like. But we've been very happily, I don't want to say happily surprised, but we've been very happy here. We belong to what I regard to be one of the very best parishes in the country. It's St. Patrick's Parish. It's not far from downtown Columbus. We don't live in the city limits. We live outside the city limits, kind of out in the countryside. But we're more than happy to make the drive. And this particular parish has been there, run by the Dominican friars since before the Civil War. And this particular parish church that we worship in is very traditional in terms of its architecture and the beautiful statues and pictures, images that are inside the church. And we really love it. And we wanted our children to kind of grow up with the symbols and signs of the Catholic faith. And although I can tell you there are many really good parishes in the Diocese of Columbus, this is where our home is. And we really like it for that reason. The other thing is that unlike many other parishes, the Dominican friars who staff this parish have a surplus of vocations. They can always use more. So if you're a young man, I know you're not, Nick, but those who are listening, if you're a young man contemplating the priesthood, I would encourage you to be sure to take a good long look at the Dominican friars of the Eastern Province. And there are Dominican provinces throughout the country. They're all, you know, certainly worthy of your attention as well. But because we happen to live in this province, the Eastern Province, they're the ones that I know best. And because they have this abundance of vocations, and because our parish has a priory at that parish, we have like wall-to-wall priests at this parish. So there are, at any given time, somewhere in the neighborhood of like 8 priests living at this parish. Now, maybe 4 of them are assigned to parish duties, but you have quite a few other priests who are available for mass and confessions and things. So we have confessions practically around the clock before and after every mass, every single day. You'll never have to worry about getting to confession because the confessions are always available. And you know what? The lines are out the door. People line up, and I'm talking, you know, 15, 20, 25 people deep waiting to go to confession because they can. It's an embarrassment of riches in a way. And that's one reason why this parish is so popular, because the preaching is good, the mass is celebrated reverently, They are trained theologians, these Dominican friars. They have not only the intellectual heft, but they also are trained on how to preach. So you're never going to hear a bad sermon. You're never going to hear a boring sermon, which is another great thing, because if you're there and you want to be fed from the Word of God and you want the truths of the faith to be explained in a way that is meaningful, it's really good when the preacher is effective, and these Dominican friars are. So enough of my extolling the Dominicans. I can't say enough good about them, but suffice to say, for those reasons and a few others in terms of like some of the wonderful people that we know at this parish, we really do like St. Patrick's. And if you do decide to move to Columbus, Ohio, give it a try. I think you'll find it to be a very welcoming place, and lots of great things to say about that. Now, I don't want in any way to suggest that it's the only good parish. There are many other good parishes, but it really wouldn't be helpful for me to go through geographically and start listing different places. The Diocese of Columbus is rather large, and I think no matter where you go, you're going to find good there. Certainly, you're going to find good Catholics. Now, what about On Fire Catholics? Well, you'll find them everywhere. They're available in abundance at the parish that I attend, but they're all over throughout the diocese. Now, another recent development that may cause you to be thoughtful about Columbus, Ohio, is that we just recently received word of our new bishop, Bishop-elect Earl Fernandez, who is a priest of the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. And it's a great bit of news for this diocese, because he is young, he is very well-educated, he got his PhD in moral theology, he's a man of the church, he's very faithful. I've gotten to know him a little bit in person, and got to know him a little bit in person before we heard the announcement that he was named as our new bishop. So he's vigorous, he's a man of action, he's a man of letters, very personable. And I have very high hopes, very, very optimistic for a lot more good to come out in the Diocese of Columbus. So those are things to consider. The comparison with Steubenville, it would be difficult to make insofar as Steubenville is a much smaller diocese in terms of the number of parishes. They have a good bishop and a lot of faithful men in the priesthood there. But it's a different kind of place. So Steubenville, which is at the extreme eastern end of the state of Ohio, I think a lot of people who are not familiar with the geography of Ohio, and if they're Catholic, then they think, oh, do you live near Steubenville? Well, what they don't realize is that Steubenville is literally perched on the very border with a tiny sliver of West Virginia. So you go across the bridge, across the river, and you're in Weirton, West Virginia, and you go maybe, I don't know, 10 miles at most, and you're in Pennsylvania. So it's a much different environment. It's very working class, blue collar. The steel mills were prevalent back in the day. Most of them have gone away now. So it's a different kind of feel. Steubenville was a very happening population center 100 years ago, but it is not that anymore. So it's one of those towns that has many good people, many people associated with Franciscan University, which is certainly a bright spot in Steubenville, but it's not like Columbus. It's not the big city. It doesn't have the amenities. It doesn't have the opportunities that you would find in Columbus, and you would also have fewer parishes to choose from. But many wonderful people. The words On Fire certainly describe some of the fantastic people who teach at and in other ways are associated with Franciscan University. So I can say a lot of great things about that diocese as well, but it is a different kind of place. And by different, I don't mean bad. I just mean different. It's not like moving to a city such as Columbus. But I'm sure that either place you go to, if you wind up in one or the other, you're going to find a lot of good there. And if you do wind up in Columbus, Ohio, be sure to look us up. We would be happy to see you. This email comes in from, who's this from? This is from Terry, who writes in to say, I heard some of your commentary on an earlier show and answers and thoughts toward the end about resurrected bodies. And I believe that Terry is referring to an article that I shared recently from Monsignor Charles Pope, who was writing about what are the 7 distinctive characteristics of glorified bodies. And so assuming that that's what you're referring to. He says, an answer of one moment yields or changes in another moment to another question. I personally don't want to get too sensual, but I just wonder about presentifications during a process of moments. Again, he says, I highly recommend that you read The Acting Person by Karol Wojtyła, who eventually became Pope John Paul II. Well, that terminology that you're using there, although I understand that Archbishop Karol Wojtyła, Cardinal Karol Wojtyła, eventually Pope John Paul II, he used very precise and academic terminology. But I'm not sure if I understand specifically what you're referring to when you say about our resurrected bodies, and you say that one moment yields or changes in another moment to another question, and you're wondering about presentifications during a process of moments. I think what you're referring to is how in this world, we live in time and space, obviously, and we experience time as a procession of moments. Now. We remember the past. We think about the future. We anticipate the future, but we don't know what it is. But we do experience now, but in a procession of moments, as you put it. So with regard to our bodily condition in this life, that process of time, which is one way to think of time, is the way in which change is measured. Not just change in terms of a change of location in the form of locomotion, moving from one place to another in space, but also the change that takes place in terms of going from what you could become or might become to what you actually become. So we're all getting older. Things get bigger. Things get smaller. Things break. Things die. Things come into existence. They go out of existence. And so that kind of motion involves change, or as the philosophers, such as Karol Wojtyła, would say, the rise of potency to act, the rise or the movement of what a thing could be or could become to eventually what it does become. So those aspects of time and are existing in a procession of moments, it affects the way our body is in time. So our bodies are aging. People get fatter, people get skinnier. People get healthier, people get less healthy. The body breaks down over time. So if I'm reading you correctly, the way this ties in with what Monsignor Charles Pope was saying about our resurrected glorified bodies is they are not subject anymore to those vagaries. You are not experiencing in a way that we can't really understand, but when you get to heaven and you have your body eventually after the general resurrection, you will be experiencing eternity, not so much as a procession of moments, but you will participate to a certain extent in the way that God he sees everything as now. And when we talk about eternity, it's easy to imagine, because that's the way we exist in time right now, it's easy to imagine that it's just sort of this endless timeline. But it really isn't that. It's something more than that. It's not like, gee whiz, I've been here for 1,000 years. Wow. And then 1,000 years later, wow, I've been here for 2,000 years. Wow, I've been here for 1,000,000 years. Wow, I've been here for 1,000,000,000 years. I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be more in keeping with what God himself experiences, which is a pure timelessness, and to the extent that, say, angels and human beings who are in heaven can experience something akin to that. It wouldn't be the absolute timelessness that God has, but something like that. That too means that our bodies in heaven will not be subject to the changes of the passage of time. So I hope I'm reading between the lines correctly on this issue, and I do hope that that answers the question. Thank you. This email comes in from Lindsay, who says, Hi, Patrick. I was brought so much joy to hear the Mr. Rogers theme song as your transition music this morning. My kids are huge fans of Mr. Rogers' show and your show. Thank you for that. You mentioned not understanding why Mr. Rogers changes his shoes. He transitioned into, you know, it's funny because I'm going to interrupt. I remember when I said that, I thought, well, someone's probably going to explain it to me. And I don't mind. Believe me, I don't mind, Lindsay. So she says, he transitioned into a sweater and sneakers to make the kids feel more comfortable and to give a sense that he was welcoming them into his home. On a documentary I watched on him, and he changed his shoes, not to ruin the magic of the neighborhood or of make-believe. He was doing all the running between the scenes to move the puppets, and the sneakers allowed him to stay quiet. Another fun fact, all the sweaters in his closet in the beginning were knitted by his mother. That's really cool.
I didn't know that. Me neither. This is great.
How many sweaters do you have, Cyrus, that were knitted by your mother?
I can count them on one hand. Zero.
Yeah, I probably don't have any. I certainly don't have any more that I could fit. But what a homey little detail. I never knew that.
I love it.
Yeah. I'll never look at Mr. Rogers the same way. So, Lindsay, thank you. And she ends up by saying, I enjoy listening to your show. Thanks for all you do. Well, thank you for what you just did, Lindsay. I appreciate that. I'm not taking phone calls this hour just because we have so many emails that have come through, and we'll just keep plowing through them. This one comes in from Brian. He says, Patrick, I am non-denominational, and so one of my friends where I work, we both agree with you about praise and worship music. We don't like it either. I call it me, myself, and I music. I listen to you every day on my commute to work, and I've learned a lot from you. Thank you for what you do. My father converted to Catholicism a few years before he passed, and I kind of understand why now after listening to you. Again, thank you. And this is coming in from Brian. Well, Brian, I'm really touched by how kind you are in what you said. And even though we agree on this issue that praise and worship music doesn't please us, I know a lot of other people would disagree with us. But I know what you mean about the me, myself, and I. That was something I said on a recent show about my own personal. Now, I realize, again, I'm running a risk here because I'm admitting something about my own preferences, and that's all they are. But my own taste, my own preference does not include liking praise and worship music. I just don't like it. And my reaction is, as I said on that earlier program, that it does seem to me, because I've tried to really pay attention to the lyrics for many of these different songs that I've sat through. And unlike, say, the more traditional hymns, the more traditional liturgical music you would see at Mass, the praise and worship music has a tendency to focus more on what I think about God, or, you know, what God is doing in my life. Or there's more of a tilt, it seems, in the direction of me as opposed to what I personally like more, which is a tilt in the direction of me focusing on God. And I personally don't really get into singing songs about me and how this makes me feel and what I just did and what God is doing for me. I mean, all those things are true, but I would rather focus on the Lord as opposed to focusing on my role in the whole thing. But that's just me. But anyway, Brian, thank you for the note. And you are an example of what I was talking about on a show recently, and that is that this program has a very wide and variegated audience. We have lots of Catholics, naturally, but we also have many non-Catholics as well. You're among them. And I hope that in due time, maybe you might see your way clear to follow your father into the Catholic Church. And I'll try to do my very best to give you all the good reasons to do that. But in the meantime, thank you for that email. I appreciate it very much. Here's another email. And this one comes in from Stephen, who says, Dear Patrick, I am letting you know that I am not going to argue with your stance on praise and worship music. I totally get where you're coming from. In my case, since I play the drums, I'm actually grateful for praise and worship songs. This kind of music helps me to get work at local Protestant churches in my area. It is my favorite music, not exactly, or no, I'm sorry. He says, is it my favorite music? Not exactly, but it's nice to perform in a church setting versus a bar setting. I do what it takes to learn these songs and play my best behind the kit, and they compensate me for my time and talents. I then turn around and give the money to the Catholics. For 2022, I pledge 15% gross rounded to the nearest dollar for every week I'm compensated for drumming it to give that to my local parish. And he's writing from Waco. And this is where Red Sea Catholic Radio broadcasts. By the way, shout out to Red Sea Catholic Radio, all the wonderful folk there. I've had a chance to meet you several times and come down and visit. He says, I listen to your show on Red Sea Catholic Radio, as well as he donates to Sisters of Mary Morningstar in Woodway. Just wanted to let you know, again, I'm not trying to change your mind. It's all good. Take care. Sincerely, Steve. Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate your ironic spirit. You mentioned something that I think in a way sort of furthers, at least in my own mind, a rationale for why I have the view that I do of praise and worship music. And that is, you mentioned that you perform in a church setting. Now, I grant that, especially in like a non-denominational church setting, it's even more of a performance than anything else. And it's intended, I think, to be a kind of performance. But this is where I think it underscores maybe one other way in which I think that praise and worship music is not preferable, for the reason that it so easily can become a performance, and very often does. And this is why it's not uncommon, especially when the people are very talented, talented musicians, talented singers, and the music is very well produced, etc. It's not uncommon where people in the congregation will applaud when Mass is over. And see, that is, in my view, a kind of a red flag, because you have this natural instinct to applaud a good performance, and that's what it winds up being. Even if people don't intend it to be that way, it can easily devolve into a kind of performance, in which case, just because of the nature of the music and the high quality of the musicians and the high quality of the singing, etc., you can't help but be affected at that level and think of it as a performance, even though you're telling yourself, no, I'm really here for Mass, I'm really here for Jesus. But often the music kind of competes with that. And I'm not ascribing any bad motives to anybody, because it may well be completely unintentional. But certain kinds of music are more likely, I mean, let's face it, certain kinds of music, Kool and the Gang, hello, you put on Kool and the Gang, you have the sort of immediate instinct to start moving your body, you know, to dance to it. Certain kinds of music, it generally will induce a kind of reaction in you, tapping your feet, wanting to sing along, dancing. These are all very basic human impulses that we have, and music directly affects the way we human beings act in a bodily way, not just mentally and intellectually. So this is one of the reasons why I think the church, historically at least, has been very careful in not permitting and taking into account certain cultures where modes of music are different and they are more in keeping with the culture. So I'm thinking about in Africa, for example, where there would be much more in the way of rhythm and drumming than there might be, let's say, in 18th century England or something like that. So I'm taking into account these cultural differences. Nonetheless, the church, in her wisdom, has recognized that certain kinds of music are less appropriate for a liturgical setting, so let's say the Mass, and some are more appropriate. This is one reason why, when I was talking about this the other day on the program, I adverted to what the Sacrosanctum Concilium document from Vatican II said. It's one of those little-known details of Vatican II, which is that Vatican II, in its description of its plans for the reform of the liturgy, it said that pride of place should be given to what? Gregorian chant and polyphony, which is another form of chant. And yet who since Vatican II really has paid much, if any, attention to that? And that is coming from the church's wisdom and recognition that although some forms of music are laudable in some settings, they're not helpful in others. And so at Mass, if the music is distracting, or if it comes across as a performance, if it makes you want to twist and shout, probably not appropriate for Mass. Or we could say it's less appropriate than something that would be more conducive to ordering your thoughts and your minds to God. Now, here again, one more time, I'm going to say it just to say it. And that is that I recognize that everyone's taste is different. And so I'm only sharing with you my own personal experience, but it's underpinned by the fact that there are dimensions of music that we don't even necessarily realize how they affect us. So, thoughts for your consideration. All right, we're going to take a break. This is the perfect time to catch our breaths. I'm going to come right back and talk a little bit more about this. There are a number of other praise and worship music emails that have come in, and I may get to a few more of those, but we'll see about that. I told you, Cyrus, I told you that we would get an outpouring of people who wanted to talk about this issue. One that just came in, I'll read it quickly. It's from Kurt. It's short and sweet. He says, praise God, you don't like praise and worship music. Well, I feel appreciated. Thank you, Kurt. I appreciate that. And I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Here's another relevant radio miracle moment.
I grew up a Catholic, and like your earlier caller, I got into a band and decided I didn't need God anymore. Well, fast forward, I ended up getting married at 46. A place called Harmony, a converted cheese storage area that they made into a chapel. Fast forward, we go to church, and then we decided, you know what, we want to get married in the church. Mm-hmm. And so everything worked out to where we could. So we got remarried. And then about 3 months later, I get an email to lector. So I started to read for the church, and Relevant Radio has been extremely important to me and bringing me back to the church. So I just want everybody to know that, you know, what you're listening to is the truth.
This miracle moment was brought to you by you. You can give on the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com.
This hour sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. I'm reading your emails today. If you want to send me one, just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on Connect, and you can send me an email. I've got a huge stack of them, but I love it, and I really appreciate you sending them to me. I was talking before the break about music at Mass and, you know, different people's different opinions about, say, like praise and worship music or more traditional hymns, things of that nature. I'd like to draw your attention to a book that I found very helpful because it gets into, you might say, the psychology and the psychosomatic effects of music. It's called Music and Morals, A Theological Appraisal of the Moral and Psychological Effects of Music. And it's written by a Dominican friar by the name of Basil Cole. And it's a very helpful book. It takes a Thomistic approach, inquiring into how does music affect you? How does it affect you bodily? Something like syncopation, which is the way in which music can have a beat. And scientific studies, you can look these up and you'll find them. Scientific studies have been done on the effects of syncopation or a beat on human mood or your libido and the ways in which certain kinds of music can, let's just say energize you in particular emotional and even physical ways. It's scientifically demonstrated that music has these kinds of effects. Music can have a very calming effect. What's that famous line? Who was it from? Tennyson? I forget who said it, but words to the effect, this is probably not an exact quote, but words to the effect that music soothes the savage beast's breast or something like that. And I presume that's referring to like a gorilla or something. If he heard violin music, it might calm him down. I don't know. But that phrase actually has some truth behind it. And that is, isn't it true that certain kinds of music, they just put you in a certain mood? So certain kinds of music will make you feel soothed and calm. Maybe if you put on some classical music in the background while you're cooking in the kitchen or the kids are, you know, doing their thing around the house and you've got some classical music playing in the background. I remember one time when Nancy and I were house hunting, and one house that we went to look at, the first thing I noticed was that it was filled with occult images. So there were, you know, like witchcraft stuff in this house. So as soon as I saw that, I realized, well, this is definitely not the house that we're going to buy. But the woman who owned the house happened to be there. That's rather unusual. Typically, people who own the house are not there when it's being shown by a realtor. But for whatever reason, she happened to be there. And so I'm noticing as we're walking from room to room, even though I had already said, ain't no way we're ever going to get this house, but I still was curious. And I saw these occult symbols and signs and things all around the house. I think there were tarot cards and other stuff. Well, the other thing about this place that was very jarring to me was that she had Gregorian chant playing softly in the background. And having been a student of Latin for many years, I don't know, what's it been, half a dozen years, whatever, between high school and college, my Latin is still, at this point, good enough that I could understand much of what they were saying. At one point, my Latin was much better than it is now, but it, you know how things are. Use it or lose it, right? Use it or lose it. So I asked her, I said, that's an interesting choice of music. You know, I didn't go so far as to say, why are, you know, if you're a witch or if you're into witchcraft, why are you listening to this kind of music? I said, that's an interesting choice of music. And she nodded her head. She said, oh, yes. She said, I really like it. She says, I don't know what they're saying, but it's very soothing to me. And I said, well, actually, you know, these are Catholic monks, because it was men's Gregorian chant. And I said, they're praising God. They're praising Jesus Christ. And she sort of arched her eyebrow and she said, I didn't know that. And I said, yeah, there, all of this is about God and how God loves us and how we love God and Jesus. And she didn't balk or anything. She just said, okay, that's interesting. And all she knew was that the music made her feel calm. I've never forgotten that. And the reason, I think, for me at least, is because it was a great example of how this woman, who was living pretty thoroughly deep in the occult, who knows what she was doing? I didn't ask her about that. But yet the beauty and the peace and the tranquility of Gregorian chant, it spoke to her at a human level, even without understanding the words. So let's use that as an example of what I'm talking about. There are certain types of music that have, generally speaking, a tendency to accomplish that kind of change in your mood. It can make you less tense. It can calm you down, etc. Other kinds of music have the opposite effect. So one example, and Cyrus, I don't know if I've ever asked you about this, but another example, you know, since I'm at it, since I'm on a tear, another example of music that I don't even call it music, but I absolutely hate this form of what they call music, screamo.
Have you heard of screamo? Can you give me an example, please?
Example of screamo? No, I can't because I don't listen to it. But whenever it comes, well, it's this screaming. The voice is not singing. It's screaming. And the music is like.
We call that Cookie Monster rock, where it's like,
I want a cookie. I want a cookie.
Kind of like that, but not benign.
Right.
I used to call it thrash metal music. I don't even know what the, you know, it probably changes the terminology. I saw screamo recently.
Hey, one of the calmest people I've ever known, just a genuinely good, solid human being. That was his music of choice, and he loved it.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I don't get it. And it didn't fit any of his personality at all. But he's like, yeah, I just, you know, I love it. And I don't see the harm in it. I'm like, okay, man, well, I'm not listening to it.
No. To me, it's like you just stuck a microphone down in hell, and that's what, you know, that's what they're playing down there. There's just something deeply disturbing about it, deeply almost terrifying, because it's so aggressive and violent. And I mean, the guy's throat must be hamburger by the time he's done singing one of those songs. I can't imagine how you could get through a whole concert.
Oh, yeah.
But point being,
these bands don't last 30 years. You know,
no,
they last five.
Yeah.
Someone's going to prove me wrong.
Paul McCartney said in an interview later that when he did the end of Hey Jude, where he's screaming for like the last 2 minutes, he said he basically couldn't sing or talk for days after that. He just had to give his voice a rest. But okay. So anyway, so all I'm trying to say here is that maybe your friend is like the one exception to the rule, but that kind of headbanging, screaming, thrashing, what I would regard to be diabolical music, it's going to have an effect on how you look at life. And it, to me, I can't see how it would not agitate you. So maybe your friend was on Prozac or something like that. I don't know. But this book, getting back to the book, see, I left a popcorn trail. I knew exactly where I was coming back to. This book, Music and Morals, A Theological Appraisal of the Moral and Psychological Effects of Music, it's really good because it gets into how does music really affect you. Okay, proceeding. This is from Anthony, and he's talking about the discussion about worship music, etc. He says, worship rap versus baby talk. Without a doubt, I'd rather listen to Kanye over Kamala clips that you often play. They are so painful. Do we have any of our vice president instructing us on matters of importance that we could play? Just to give us an example of what Anthony is referring to. Do we have anything about space?
Yeah, you know, we got this this one right here.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Space is exciting. It spurs our imaginations, and it forces us to ask big questions. Space, it affects us all, and it connects us all.
So yeah, there you have it. So if that's what you're talking about, what can I say? This email comes in from Beverly, who says, Patrick, how very wonderful that we have Catholic Radio to share with the world. All of the speakers are wonderful, but my favorites are, and she mentions a few names. Thank you for mentioning me and Father Simon. And Cyrus, she also mentions you. And I thought you might like that. Our secular world, she says, needs to reach everyone, and to use the internet, the radio, and every form of modern day media is genius. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I have decided to leave Relevant Radio as one of my beneficiaries. That is truly remarkable and most deeply appreciated. Thank you for that. She said, on a side note, Cyrus, when he was playing the theme song to the Titanic, she said, my dog started barking. Too funny. May God continue to bless your words, thoughts, and deeds. And that's Beverly. Well, thank you, Beverly. I appreciate that. Okay. I get it, Cyrus. I get it. All right. We're going to take a break. You might enjoy this. Just listen and see how it affects your mood. And we'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, including more of your emails. And the next one up is someone who's angry at me. I'll tell you what that's all about when we come back. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. I promised you that we will continue with your emails, and so we shall. I'll start this one off. This is from Donna, and she's listening in Chicago. She says, Patrick was extremely rude to Donnie. And if you're not sure what she's referring to, there was a gentleman who called up, presumably a Protestant, who was disagreeing with the church's teaching that in heaven we will still be male and female. And he was citing a passage where Jesus, speaking in Matthew's gospel, said that in heaven we will neither marry nor be given in marriage, but we will be like the angels. And so Donnie started out by saying he wanted to tell me why I was wrong about what I was saying, and he misquoted the passage as a way to make his argument that we would not have gender when we get to heaven. And so I stopped him and I said, well, you got to quote the passage correctly. Otherwise, you know, what are we discussing? You got to quote the passage correctly. So I cited the passage, and it was one of those calls where he kept saying, you know, just give me a chance to speak, give me a chance to speak. And every time I would do that, he would start throwing lots and lots of stuff out there that, for you, the listener, it would not be helpful if you suddenly have all this massive information. How do you manage that? So it would be better to deal with a kind of a point-by-point basis. But, you know, it was one of those calls, kind of argumentative, and these things happen. But in any case, let's get back to Donna's reaction. So I was extremely rude to Donnie, she says. I kept interrupting Donnie and never gave him a fair chance to speak. She says, I am disappointed Patrick was so disrespectful. And this is all in caps, so she's shouting now. And he had to win and used his debate techniques to put Donnie down. I no longer respect Patrick and will not listen to his show. Okay, Donna, I understand. And sorry to see you go, but I hope you find what you're looking for. And I'm glad you took a minute to write to me. I really am. Thank you. Let's see. This next email comes in from Carol, who says, and Carol's listening in Milwaukee. She says, do you believe because Biden is causing scandal for the church that God is allowing him to be made a fool of and is withholding his blessings. I have no earthly clue on that issue. I do agree with you that Joe Biden is scandalous because he claims to be Catholic. I mean, ontologically, he's Catholic. I mean, he's been baptized and he's received a sacrament. So I don't quibble with the fact that he is Catholic in that ontological sense. But it's really more a matter of, is a Catholic a good Catholic? And what do you mean by good Catholic? Well, I mean, among other things, it could mean at least, are you seeking to live your life in accord with what Jesus taught? Now, Jesus taught the law, the Ten Commandments, not the ceremonial law, but the Ten Commandments, the moral law, that he came to fulfill it. He came to uphold it. And the fifth commandment is, thou shalt not kill. I mean, it's right there in black and white. Thou shalt not kill. And most specifically, thou shalt not kill applies to innocent human life. It's not talking about butchering cattle. It's not talking about war, where you have to go into a battlefield and fight against an enemy who's trying to kill you. The fifth commandment is against thou shalt not kill, meaning you shalt not murder, meaning you shalt not knowingly, intentionally take the life of an innocent person. It's wrong. It's evil. So I don't get it. I don't understand how a Catholic can say, yeah, I'm Catholic. Sure, I'm Catholic. I carry a rosary in my pocket and I go to Mass and, hey, look, I've got ashes on my forehead. That's all great. But if you're also spending every waking moment supporting abortion, to use that as one example here, you're not a good Catholic in my book anyway. And who am I to judge? Well, I'm no one to judge. But Jesus did say, judge with the right judgment, and by their fruits you shall know them. So we're obligated to observe behavior, ours and other people's, and then make determinations on the basis of that. If you saw somebody dressed up in a KKK outfit and heading down to the local the cross-burning ceremony, you'd probably judge that, wouldn't you? And you'd say, hey, don't do that. That's racist. That's wrong. And you'd be right to do so. Or maybe put it a different way. I'm not in any way suggesting that Joe Biden is racist or that he has in any way, any time, or favor for the KKK, but let's imagine a hypothetical. What if instead of abortion, what if he were in fact a member of the KKK? Do you think for a minute that people on the left would say, well, he's a devout Catholic. He's a good Catholic. Look, he's got a rosary in his pocket. Look, he's got ashes on his forehead. Look, there he is. He's coming out of Mass. He went to communion. But if he were attending KKK rallies and burning crosses and espousing racial hatred, could you with a straight face, and I'm not talking to you, Carol, I'm talking about the people who might want to argue with me on this point, could you with a straight face say that he's a good Catholic if he was endorsing and participating in something as heinous as racial hatred as espoused by the KKK? Obviously not. And everyone knows it. So give me a break. Not you, Carol. Give me a break. I mean, if you're going to complain and say, well, look, he's a Catholic, he carries a rosary, he goes to Mass, he goes to communion. Yeah, but he also endorses and promotes abortion. So is he causing scandal? Of course he's causing scandal. Of course he's causing scandal. Now, the sad thing is, it's one thing for Joe Blow to cause scandal. It's bad enough. Jesus said, you know, scandal will come, but woe to the man by whom scandal comes. But if Joe Blow causes scandal, well, he just works at, you know, the local grocery store. What if you're the president of the United States and your influence not only affects policy and budgets and donations to Planned Parenthood, etc., but it also sets the tone for many people who don't necessarily think quite so rigorously as they could and should, and they wind up being swayed into thinking, well, I guess if he's Catholic and he's pro-abortion, it's okay. I mean, there are some people who are not terribly swift who arrive at such conclusions. That scandal, that's orders of magnitude higher levels of scandal. And it has to be opposed with every bit the same vigor as you would oppose a president if he were a member of the KKK. And abortion is even worse. So you're asking me, Carol, back to you. Thanks again for being patient as I ranted a little bit there. But are you saying, is God allowing him to be made a fool of by withholding his blessing? I don't know. I really don't know. I in a way, I almost don't want to know. Because, I mean, one could say, okay, well, what about Donald Trump? What about George W. Bush? What about Ronald Reagan? What about Bill Clinton? What about, you know what I'm saying? You could look at any president, and they all had their flaws. Some had many more flaws than others. But in any case, does God allow them to be made a fool of? Perhaps he does. You know, there's just no way to know. All I do know is that we have to hold ourselves accountable for what we're willing to go along with or what we're not willing to go along with. God will hold them accountable. And I suppose we can all hold politicians accountable at the ballot box, that's for sure. But ultimately, transcending all those issues, it seems to me that I have to hold myself accountable for what I'm willing to go along with or not go along with. And that's where I have to say, you know, I can keep silent or I can speak out. And some people say, well, that's just political partisanship. No, it's not. Abortion is not a religious issue. It's a moral issue. Now, it affects us religiously because if you believe in God, you're much more likely to pay attention to something like the Ten Commandments. But there are people of goodwill who don't even believe in God who recognize that abortion is wrong. So to talk about it, to speak about it, even though it's been politicized, there it is, but it doesn't change the fact that we still have an obligation to speak out when we can and when we should. So those are my thoughts, Carol. Maybe more than you bargained for, but that's my reaction. Tom writing in from, he's listening on the internet. Tom writes in and says, you said that we will maintain our gender in our glorified bodies. Will we also maintain our reproductive qualities? I would think not, because Jesus said we will not be given in marriage in heaven. This is true. You're right about that. But it seems that, yes, we will, because the essence of your sex, the essence of your gender as a man entails, among other things, it entails your anatomy and physiology. So it's not merely chromosomal, although that is certainly one of the markers. It's also, and maybe more pointedly or more specifically, it's your anatomy and physiology. So to be a male of the species includes, under normal circumstances, having those reproductive organs and systems in your body that make you capable of generating life. And the same would be true for women. The female of the species has certain reproductive organs and systems in her body that make it possible for her to conceive life in her body and gestate that life for 9 months and then give birth. I mean, just imagine, it doesn't take much brain work to figure this out. As a man, if, you know, it can't happen, but if for some reason it somehow happened that you could conceive a child inside your body, how's that child going to get out? It's not. So this is just another way of looking at the way human bodies are designed. So back to your question, in heaven, we will still be male. We will still be female. When Jesus rose from the dead and appeared to his followers, he didn't appear as an angel because he wasn't an angel. He was a man, the God-man, God himself who took human nature in the incarnation. So Jesus in his glorified, resurrected body that he is now reigning in heaven at the right hand of the Father with and in, he's a man. And that's how we will be, both male and female. So the passage in Matthew where Jesus talks about the angels, it's certainly true. We will be like them insofar as we will not be marrying or giving in marriage. And the reason for that is the purpose for marriage is procreation. That's the fundamental or the primary end of marriage is procreation. True, sexual pleasure and the intimacy and friendship of the spouses and the stability of the home and all those other things are very much part of it and certainly a close second in the case of marital intimacy and pleasure. But the primary goal of marriage, the primary end of marriage is procreation. And we are not going to procreate. There'll be no need for procreation because we will see God face to face. So it's in that sense that Jesus meant that we will be like the angels. He doesn't mean that we will become angels or anything of that nature. This comes in from Ben, who wants to alert me to a story that I am aware of, but thank you for sending me the note. He says, a professor reaches a $400,000 settlement in a free speech case. This is at Shawnee State University. The professor is Nicholas Merriweather. He brought the lawsuit with the Alliance Defending Freedom, asserting that it was his First Amendment right not to use a student's preferred pronouns. The university indicated The $400,000 agreement was for economic reasons. I'm glad he won. I'm really glad he won. And yeah, I was familiar with that. Thank you. This one, I think I have time. This comes in from Anonymous. Hi, Patrick. I have had 6 miscarriages. I hope to see those children in heaven, but I also wonder if I'll be able to have more children in heaven without the limitations of the body that I have experienced here on earth. Thank you, Anonymous. Well, Anonymous, my heart goes out to you, and I do hope and pray that when you get to heaven, that all 6 of those babies will be there with you. We can trust in God's mercy and his love for us and his love for those babies. But in the meantime, I can tell you that in heaven, no, you will not have any more children, because childbearing is proper to human experience in this life. And then when we go to heaven, this is before the general resurrection, you will be a disembodied soul. So to be fully, truly human is to be body and soul united together. That's how God created us. We're not like the angels, who are pure spirits. We have spirits, our souls, but they're made for our bodies and vice versa. So upon your death, your body will go back to the ground and your soul will continue for all eternity. And in your soul, of course, you can't procreate. You need a body to procreate. And then in the general resurrection, when our bodies and souls are reunited, there will be no reason to procreate, because all of the people that God has planned to exist will exist. They will all have been created. All of the souls that he creates and all the bodies that are created by the union of the parents will all be there, those who are going to be there for all eternity. So there will be a finite number, and human beings will not be procreating in heaven. Or as Jesus put it, in heaven we will be like the angels, where they neither marry nor are given in marriage. And with that, I will conclude. We're going to take another break, and I'll be back with more of your emails right after this. Don't forget, if you want to send me an email, just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and you can send me one there under the Connect button. I'll see you in just a minute.